Garrison Keillor once said, a book is a gift you can open again and again. This hour, we'll find out about the best new books for giving and receiving this holiday season. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. They've made their lists, checked them twice, and are probably adding even more wonderful books at this moment. Jan Weissmiller and Paul Ingram of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City are here for our annual holiday book show. We'll talk about the best fiction and nonfiction books of the year, books you might want to give, receive, or use to escape during the holiday season. We'll talk about children's books next Monday. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. The day has come. It is time for our annual holiday book show. Next Monday, we'll have another team of independent booksellers tell us about the best new books for the kids in your life. But today, we focus on books for grown-ups. Jan Weissmiller is the owner of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. Paul Ingram is the book buyer. They are here in the studio with big piles of books. It's actually been very quiet for the last 10 minutes because they've been reading. But now I have to interrupt you guys.
Exactly.
Jan and Paul, welcome. So you didn't read these books before you came?
Well, I sort of did. I haven't been feeling very well, and I thought I'd just be able to pick things up. And I haven't been doing so.
Well, I can't wait to see what happens this hour.
Well, yeah, this will be kind of thrilling.
And we're going to start in a non-traditional place today. Normally, we start with fiction books, but this hour we're going to start with a little bit of poetry. And of course, there's a special reason for that, Jan.
Well, I have with me this this new book, The Collected Poems of Mark Strand, and we are celebrating the life of Mark Strand all over the country and probably the world right now because he died on Saturday. And so I chose a couple of poems that I thought I would read. Mark Strand was educated at the Writers' Workshop in the 1960s and went on to become a Pulitzer Prize winner, a Poet Laureate of the United States, a MacArthur Fellow, and a beloved poet.
So you picked a couple of things to read?
I did. His very first book was published here by Stonewall Press, which I believe was Kim Merker's first press. And it was called Sleeping with One Eye Open. And so I thought I would read two poems from that book and then one of his very latest poems. And the first poem I'm going to read is I'm reading it simply because it is set here and in its title it is set in Iowa and it's called Winter in North Liberty. Snow falls, filling the moonlit fields. All night we hear the wind on the drifts and think of escaping this room, this house, the reaches of ourselves that winter dulls. Pale ferns and flowers form on the windows like grave reminders of a summer spent. The walls close in. We lie apart all night, thinking of where we are. We have no place to go.
Oh.
I know.
So beautiful.
And then this poem I wish is the title poem from that volume, which is Sleeping with One Eye Open. And I wish that this were visual so you could see the line breaks because they're amazing. And I hope that it will be clear when I read them as soon as I find this poem. I just marked it. I'm sorry.
No, I think...
So it's very nice timing for this collection to come out. I have a feeling it'll make an appearance on a lot of holiday lists this year because of that.
I think so, too.
Yeah. Well, his poems, you know, are philosophic and possibly sometimes surreal, but they're always very clear.
They're not difficult to read, or they've never been difficult for me to read.
So this one is called Sleeping with One Eye Open. Unmoved by what the wind does, the windows are not rattled, nor do the various areas of the house make their usual racket. Creak at the joints, trusses and studs, Instead, they are still. And the maples, able at times to raise havoc, evoke not a sound from their branches' clutches. It's my night to be rattled, saddled with spooks. Even the half moon, half man, half dark on the horizon, lies on its side, casting a fishy light which alights on my floor, lavishly lording its morbid look over me. Oh, I feel dead, folded away in my blankets for good, and forgotten. My room is clammy and cold, moon-handled and weird. The shivers wash over me, shaking my bones. My loose ends loosen, and I lie sleeping with one eye open, hoping that nothing, nothing will happen.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Oh, I sat with this book for a while, and he is one of my favorite contemporary poets, and he is truly a lover. I don't know. I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah. So the collected works of Mark Strand, and this is
collected poems.
And Dennis was saying earlier, right before we started the program, that there exists a poem. It's not in the book, called "Leaving WSUI."
Mark Strand poem. Was. Yeah,
yeah. So we'll be waiting for that to surface.
All right, we'll have to look that. Every year at the end of the year, we do an obituary show on River to River, remembering some of the most notable Iowans and people who played an important role in Iowa. So maybe we'll dig up "Leaving WSUI" by the time the obituary show rolls around. So are there any other poetry books that you brought with you today?
I didn't bring another poetry book.
I brought a book. Well, actually, I've forgotten to bring it, but I can talk a little bit about it.
All right.
It is one of Iowa City's longtime literary figures is Alan Kornblum, the poet and maker of wonderful books. He started out with a book called with a press called Toothpaste Press, and he died this weekend or last weekend. And his press exists now with other people, and it's called Coffee House Press, and he has become one of the truly extraordinary makers of small press life. He sort of invented small press as it exists now, and he has lots of poetry, but also fiction. And he was never a fiction guy. There's a book he has now. Well, he doesn't have it. Those who took over from him have it. It's called A Girl is a Half-Formed Thing, and it's by an Irish writer named Eimear McBride. It's a strange name. It's spelled Eimear McBride. And it's kind of a stream of consciousness book. Don't be too frightened by that. It's not a frightening book. It's not. It's fairly easy to read, and it's fairly lovely as a book. It became a really sort of hot book, you know, since we spoke earlier, or perhaps we didn't, of Twitter. There was no. We didn't even talk about her. We talked about Twitter a long time ago. Anyway, it was hugely big on the Twitter
in the Twittersphere.
In the Twittersphere, yes, and it's a book that I believe might get an award this year. I'm not sure, but it might be. might be for sentimental reasons. I don't know. A lot of people in Iowa City really liked Alan.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was just starting to be hang out with poets, I hung out with Alan. And he was so generous and so sweet as a young man. And I it's a huge loss to many people who know him and who knew him. There will be many, many more books from the Kornblum factory, as many of us called it, because he has a lot of people carrying things on from where he began.
Nice legacy.
Oh, it's a beautiful legacy, yes.
So the book that you mentioned is A Girl is a Half-Formed Thing by Emer
yes.
McBride.
By Emer McBride.
All
and
right.
And it's a quite beautiful book. It's very unusual. It's not what you would expect, although I don't know what you'd expect from a woman named Emer McBride. But she can really write.
Always expect the unexpected, right?
Yes.
Well, shall we have time before the break at least to talk about one of your fiction picks. Let's turn to fiction. And Jan, what do you want to start with?
Well, maybe I will start with this collection of short stories by Jean Ross Justice, because it is maybe closer. I mean, it's not poetry, but it's more lyric maybe than the novels that I brought to talk about.
All right.
And it is a novella and five stories. And all of them, they really have to do with family relationships and with multi-generational families and issues of issues of end of life often and aging, but also of memory. And we have sold a lot of this book, and we've had a lot of people come in the store and tell us after they've read it, how much it meant to them. And one of the things that people have said to me, which I find very interesting, is, you know, people in middle age read it and come back and say, this gave me so much confidence that my aging parents are absolutely fine.
Well, that's a nice feeling
that they have,
to have.
No,
yeah.
That they're doing well.
That despite, you know, despite ill health or mm-hmm. or various things, that they have a lot of self awareness and optimism. Oddly,
leaving a book feeling like things are okay sounds like a really
yeah,
a really
it's a
big
very
win.
Rare
but
thing.
But it's not light, right?
Okay.
You know, it's meditative. It's not afraid to look at things.
All right,
a really beautiful book.
Family Feeling by Jean Ross Justice. We'll be back in just a moment. Jan Weissmuller and Paul Ingram of Prairie Lights Bookstore will continue with our holiday book show. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We're having too much fun talking in between.
Yeah,
to stop talking when the radio starts up again, when the microphone's open. It's our holiday book show with me, Jan Weissmuller, and Paul Ingram of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. Every year we do a holiday book show. This hour we're focusing on books for grown-ups. We also would love to hear your feedback. No time for calls this hour, but if you'd like to let us know what you're looking forward to, what's on your wish list this holiday season, you can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And, of course, this is the first of two holiday book shows we do. On Monday, we'll be talking about books for the kids in your life. So be sure to join us for that as well. And we're digging into fiction, but Jan found one more Mark Strand poem she wants to read. What's this one?
Well, I had marked it to read after I read With Sleeping With One Eye Open, because it uses the same phrase. But it's a very late poem, and Sleeping With One Eye Open was a very early poem. So this is the enigma of the infinitesimal. You've seen them at dusk, walking along the shore, seen them standing in doorways, leaning from windows, or straddling the slow-moving edge of a shadow. Lovers of the in-between, they are neither here nor there, neither in nor out. Poor souls, they are driven to experience the impossible. Even at night, they lie in bed with one eye closed and the other open, hoping to catch the last second of consciousness and the first of sleep, to inhabit that no man's land, that beautiful place, to behold, as only a god might, the luminous conjunction of nothing and all.
That's beautiful. Again, yeah. Another Mark Strand poem as we remember his life this week. So many people remembering him. And let's move on in fiction picks, though. Paul, what's your first fiction?
Okay. Ian McEwan. Ian McEwan is a very popular novelist, but he's sort of known by some as a sort of on and off novelist. Some people say, well, I don't like all of his stuff. This is really a good Ian McEwan novel, and it's called The Children Act. And the story essentially is about a woman who is a judge who works with children who are in bad shape, and there is a sort of a secondary plot that goes through this about she and her husband, who is having an affair and kind of being broad about it and not being a very good Joe about it. And the two stories meld very well in the Children Act. And the story goes very slowly but richly all the way through. And you know it's going to be – there'll be something lovely at the end. Or lovely is the wrong word. Something potent at the end.
There's a big payoff.
The big payoff. And, you know, he wrote Atonement. He was written a lot of books that were major, major books. And I think this is a very strong book from him, The Children Act by Ian McEwan.
All right. What's your next pick, Jan?
I have this novel by Tessa Hadley, who's a British novelist, and it's called Clever Girl. And the title is somewhat ironic, although not completely, I believe. And it's about it follows a woman's life from her girlhood in the 1960s through the present, and she has, you know, she was given this sort of name of Clever Girl as a young girl, and then made decisions that a clever girl might not make. It's a very interesting book. And I remember the 70s, and I remember how you could float through the 70s because the economy was very good. The 60s were over. People didn't have – I mean, many people that were young were looking for passion. You know, the passion that had existed in the 60s, I mean – Passion,
yes.
Not necessarily the passion of a lover, but
right.
The passion of
the drive.
Yeah, the drive.
Oh, yeah, exciting.
And so it was a very floaty time, and I think she captures that really well. And yet decisions that you make, and maybe that's true in any era, but I think less so now, that young people make decisions that they're very unaware of, that mm-hmm. have reverberations, you know, that last throughout their life. And it's very – the narrator of this – I mean, the – Tessa Hadley's, the point of view of the narrator never sort of rationally reflects on how these decisions affected her. That's all left for the reader to interpret as time goes on. And she moves, you know, from one marriage to another and one kind of life to another. But it's very vivid in terms of mm-hmm. of scene setting. I don't really know how she remembered. You know, I mean, things came back to me that I never would myself have remembered about clothing and, you know, the way interiors looked.
A lot of touchstones things.
Mm-hmm. Jenna, who mm-hmm. really likes that book or likes Tessa Hadley in general, is Susan Boyd.
Yeah, we have a lot of people that like Tessa Hadley.
Yeah, she is very popular and really smart people like her. You know, it's good stuff.
That's a good recommendation.
It also struck me reading it. You know, I I was interested in Marilynne Robinson's statement in the New York Times magazine this summer when she was interviewed that fear is sort of a badge of honor in our culture now, that people are almost proud to be afraid and that they can use it as an excuse for any way they act. And that was so much not the case, you know, in the mm-hmm. in the 70s.
Interesting.
And that's something else that I was really aware of reading this book.
Clever Girl by Tessa Hadley. Paul, what's your next pick?
Well, there's a writer, a Scottish writer named William McIlvaney. That's McIlvaney, who was perhaps the greatest mystery writer of the 70s. And he was extraordinary, but he just dropped out of the picture. He completely dropped out of the picture. And somehow in the last 5 years or so, there's been a ton of really good Scottish mystery writers, and they've just camped out to get William McIlvaney on the to get him talked about again and to get him in print. There are three novels in his series, and this one, the first one, is called Laidlaw, which is the name of the cop that he talks about. And, well, actually, he's a detective. He's not a cop. And to some people, that makes a huge amount of difference. But the Laidlaw people, he's one of these really, really tough guys who is he's an alcoholic, you know, that kind of tough guy. And he is he has a very hard time in his life. And it becomes clear almost immediately that he's not going to have an easy time with his life. But his stories are so good. And I've been selling this to people at the store, and they have been reading it. I'm very pleased to have this book sort of back in print and back in the large picture again. There will be three of these books, and the Papers of Tony Veitch is one of them that is a big deal now, and both of these won the Silver Dagger Awards for the Glasgow Herald People's Prize. And there will be a third one that will be coming out very soon. I think it'll just be after Christmas.
Okay. But, and also coming out in paperback, so that's nice.
They will not be in hardback at all. Just be really nice-looking paperbacks.
All right. So that one is Laidlaw by William McIlvaney, although it could be the start of a whole addiction if you really enjoy that one.
Yeah,
huh?
He's kind of old, so I don't know if he's going to do that many more, but I surely enjoy these. Many people in Iowa City have been.
All right. So, Jan, what's your next pick?
Well, I have this book called The Hilltop, and it's by, I'm not sure I can, I think it's Asaf Gavran.
All right. We'll go
and,
with that.
And he actually was here during the Iowa City Book Festival, and it's one of these stories that, you know, that we like to tell. I mean, so that, you know, we knew him when, because he read on a Sunday afternoon at Prairie Lights, and six people came, and I was just really incredibly moved by his reading. And so I read the novel, and it's set in Israel, and it spans a couple of generations. The characters are sort of middle-aged farming. And so it gets into this really sort of very contemporary idea of sustainable – local and sustainable agriculture, but having come out of the kibbutz idea. Did I say kibbutz? Did I say that? Kibbutz idea.
No.
And so then the characters are of varying degrees of political involvement, and yet it's told sort of like not like a fairy tale exactly, but it's not overtly political. And that's what really makes it just wonderful. I mean, it's got a lot of characters.
You expect that.
You expect that.
Yeah.
And so – but it's not. It's domestic more. And so the political issues come up in a very understated way. And it's just a lovely book. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's gotten a huge amount of acclaim, although nobody seems to know about it. And I think it's partly a little – it's not really that long. It's you know, it reads quickly. It's over 400 pages, but it reads quickly. Right. And it has a lot of characters like a Russian novel, but also like a Russian novel once you get used to – with odd names, characters with odd names and nicknames and stuff. But once you get used to that and there is a chart of them like there usually are in Russian novels too, you can read it really quite quickly. And you come away with this sense of Israel that you certainly don't get when you're reading the newspapers.
Interesting. The Hilltop, and we're going to say his name, Asaf Gavron.
That's how I think I heard it said.
That's what I'd say.
All right. And we're getting the holiday book picks from Jan Weissmiller and Paul Ingram. We will be publishing this complete list online later today at iowapublicradio.org. Paul, what is your next pick?
Okay. Everybody probably remembers that wonderful book of letters by Vincent van Gogh.
To his brother Theo.
To his brother Theo. Well, they've got a larger this is from Yale University, has a larger, I think, better collection of these letters. It's called Vincent van Gogh, Ever Yours, The Essential Letters. Among the things that it has lots of pictures, lots of kind of beautiful sketches that he has drawn over the years. And he it talks about a lot more than just his brother Theo. It talks about his difficult relationship with his father. It talks about his it also has poetry that he's written, longish poetry that you would be absolutely surprised at. There is you can just sort of go through it, skip a few pages, go through it a little bit more, and it's a I don't know. Vincent van Gogh is absolutely interesting to me for many, many reasons. But his letters and the kind of things he spoke from his heart are truly amazing. And this book, Ever Yours, is one of the best Vincent van Gogh books that I've read, and I think you should give it a try. It's very, very interesting.
Okay. All right. So Vincent van Gogh, Ever Yours, The Essential Letters. And Jan, we're back to you.
It just occurred to me when Paul was talking that I've always thought of Emily Dickinson and Vincent van Gogh as similar in some way, that they're both extraordinary. And you don't know where they came from, you know, I mean,
yes,
you know,
that's
in terms
true.
Of schooling. And her letters are also remarkable, and it might be interesting to read. And we have both her selected letters and her collected letters at Prairie Lights. And I would.
And we have both the Dear Theo book and Vincent and Ever Yours. So if you're interested, and there's no reason not to be.
All right. Jan, what's next?
Well, I did bring Lila. We have been selling so much of Marilyn Robinson's new novel, Lila, that I thought, well, maybe everybody listening will all have already read it. And so and that well may be. but
I think there's probably a few.
But it is told from the point of view of the woman who appeared only briefly or only sort of maybe not briefly because she was a large presence, but she was not central, exactly central to Gilead, because she is the young wife of the minister Jonathan Ames that, you know, that is the central figure in Gilead. And so you have no sense in reading Gilead of who she is, except through his eyes you know that she's young and you know that he respects her greatly. And otherwise, you really don't know very much about her. And so this is her story, and it's really remarkable. I mean, both books, the present of both Gilead and Lila is 1956, I believe. And so
yeah.
Lila is 30, I think about 30 in 1956, and was therefore young during the Depression and was not exactly orphaned, but
she was not being
well cared for, and
yeah.
So she was taken by this woman named Doll that didn't have children, but they were itinerant, and
it's a very unusual circumstance.
It's a very unusual circumstance, and it moves back and forth between the present when she is meeting and has married,
yeah.
Ames to the way that the past moves through her mind.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, she has incredible integrity and bravery,
mm-hmm.
and an ability to question religion without ever really knowing where she's, you know, it's a very, very moving book.
Yeah. It's absolutely worth reading, and it will make you want to read the other two. It is very. There's a lot of stuff
Lila,
in her mind.
Yeah. Lila by Marilyn Robinson. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back with some more picks for holiday books. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's our holiday book show this hour. I have with me Jan Weissmuller and Paul Ingram of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. Coming up on Monday, we'll have another team of independent booksellers who will make some picks for the kids in your life. But today we're focusing on books for grown-ups, and we've focused mostly on fiction with a little bit of a foray into nonfiction. Where do you want to go next, Paul?
Okay. You know how the last... must be 15 to years or so, they've had the best short American short stories, best essays.
Best sports writing.
Best sports writing, yes,
right,
exactly.
Right.
Best Charity Nebbe.
And, not yet.
Not
Maybe
yet.
Someday.
But just in the last 2 years, they've got something called the Best American Infographics. And I didn't really know what infographics were, but they have to do with setting things together. For example, they will have their pictures, essentially, and they will they'll give you a sense of here's an example. My all-time favorite here is a guy has a cat, and he, you know, those things that you put in your car that can tell you exactly where you are. Well, he decides he wants to see where his cat goes and what his cat does for fun during the day.
A little bit of a GPS on the cat.
Yes, it's a GPS. That's what you call it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is he puts one of these things around the neck of his cat, and you find out that the cat is going to the north X amount, and then it stops because there's a very dangerous street and you don't cross that street. And then you see it going south, and there's this huge cluster of cat activity that's going on. Either there's a lot of sex going on amongst cats, or there's a lot of, maybe they're getting some extra food, you know, because everybody knows that cats don't just feed at one spot. And so you have this incredible picture of cats going about and living their lives in kind of an original way.
Right. Things we've
in
always
a way
suspected.
That you don't even think about.
Things we've always suspected we now can know, right?
Yes, exactly. And there's one about in France they have these little département in France. And they tell you exactly how many times you kiss on the cheek when you greet. And it's serious stuff.
Okay.
And it's filled with stuff like
that. Just great infographics. You can learn a lot.
But... Yes. 2014. That's the year, of course.
That sounds like the perfect gift for my husband who, when he looks through a magazine... I'll say, oh, did you read that article? He said, well, no, I looked at the pictures.
No,
the
that's
best
what
American infographics. That's for the readers who don't read.
Yeah, that's
perfect.
Exactly. I'm showing it to people. You know, if you got somebody in your group of friends who doesn't ever read, this is the book.
Okay.
And it's really good.
I just saw an infographic last night that was what people in each state think is the best thing about their state.
Yes, I saw that too.
And it was sunsets in
sunsets.
Iowa.
I concur.
Really?
But why isn't it sunsets in other places like California, Southern California?
I've seen a lot of gorgeous sunsets everywhere.
California was most grateful for YouTube, so we just have better taste. All right. So, Jan, do you want to move into nonfiction?
Yes, I will. I have because I have a book that sort of is a nice compliment to Paul's, and it's called A History of the World in 12 Maps. And the final map is Google Earth, as you might guess.
Yeah.
So this sort of starts very, very early with – well, first of all, the guy who put it together is named Jerry Broton, Brotton, and he says, these 12 maps were created at particularly crucial moments when their makers took bold decisions about how and what to represent. In the process, they created new visions of the world that aimed not only to explain to their audiences that this was what the world looked like, but to convince them of why it existed and to show them their own place in it, which is you know, very interesting, because in the early, you know, sort of medieval maps. Oh, and this was a great Oscar Wilde quote, too. Oscar Wilde famously remarked that a map of the world does not include utopia. If a map of the world does not include utopia, it is not even worth glancing at.
Nice.
But the first one was Ptolemy's geography, which was, you know, in Egypt in AD 150. And then the next one is in, oddly, I would not have guessed this, it was in 1154 in Sicily. Roger II, who was king of Sicily and died in 1154, had put together, you know, this empire, the Byzantine Empire, that had included, you know, people from, you know, Christians and Muslims and Persians and all these various religious groups. And so this map sort of showed them all and showed them getting along together and showed them how they could exist together. And so that's a very kind of wonderful thing.
No, it's really.
And it's got wonderful plates in it. And there's one of my favorite ones that I was showing Dennis right before we came on is the first map that depicted America as a continent. And it was, I think, 1501. And it was done by a German. And it just sold in 2003 for $10 million.
Wow.
All right, you mean the original?
Yeah.
History of the World in 12 Maps. Jerry Broughton put that together. And Paul, what do you have next?
I've got something called What If? Serious Scientific Answers to Absurd Hypothetical Questions. It's sort of a kid's book, but we don't have it with the kids' books. I heard a kid give a lecture about it. The guy at the university bookstore.
Matt Loggy.
No.
Oh, Doug Ward.
Doug Ward, yeah. His son, who is who is quite bright and a very, very good reader, talked about why this was such a great book. And and among the questions they ask are, if my printer could literally print out money, would it have that big an effect on the world? Well, I'm not. But the thing about Randall Munroe, that's M-U-N-R-O-E. He's the guy who puts it together. He is a science guy.
He's also the creator of the website xkcd.com, yeah, which have just amazing, hilarious cartoons.
You know it,
yes,
then.
Yes. A lot of people are fans.
Do your kids?
You know, I'm a fan. I don't think I've ever shown the kids. I should.
Yeah. It's but he actually goes through and does these difficult things, you know. Which U.S. state is actually flown over the most?
Is that Iowa?
It has to be.
Yeah, probably.
Well, that sounds like so much fun.
What would happen if you made a periodic table out of cube-shaped bricks, where each brick was made of the corresponding element? I mean, this is hard. But
yeah.
This guy does it.
All right.
And I really love the guy.
All right. That's What If by Randall Munroe.
Yes.
And we've only got about 7 minutes left, so we need to move quickly. Jan?
Well, actually, I want to talk about this book on the Beatles lyrics that's edited by Hunter Davies, who actually did write a biography of the Beatles. But what he has been able to do is find. He himself owns 9, you know, fragments of paper where the actual lyrics were first written.
Wow.
And the second largest collection is 7 that was owned by John Cage. Isn't that interesting? Because Yoko Ono and John knew John Cage. And so those are at Northwestern University. And the others he tracked down, because now that they're valuable, you can find when they go up for auction.
Sure.
And because he did know them and write about them in the late 60s, he also has a lot of insight of his own. But it's really, I don't know. Obviously, I grew up with the Beatles when these songs were, you know, sort of coming out, even though I was 8 when they were on Ed Sullivan, and my babysitter turned the channel from Bonanza and I was screaming, and then suddenly I was hooked. and it's just kind of amazing to read about the moments that these were all composed.
Yeah.
And
they really were just on the they were just figured out as they were thinking, you know, this is what the song would
and
be.
And really, at least at first, the music was more important than the lyrics, obviously. Like but on the other hand, John says later on, he says, actually, you know, Love, Love Me Do is just as important as I Am the Walrus.
Nice. Nice.
And there was also kind of a sad thing in here that when they cut Please Please Me, the first album that they cut, it was on the same day that Sylvia Plath died a few blocks away from where she died. Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
Sergeant Pepper was named because someone said salt, passed the salt and pepper, and one of them thought it was Sergeant Pepper.
Funny.
No, I would never have guessed that.
All right. So the Beatles lyrics, which that would be a great gift for anyone.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Anybody of our generation.
Or the next generation, or perhaps the one after that as well, Paul. All right, what's next?
Okay, The Laughing Monsters by Dennis Johnson. Dennis Johnson is an Iowa City writer and character and brilliant person of letters. This is one of his kind of darker books, kind of like the Tree of Smoke, where he's talking about really angry, dark people going through the whose the largest things of their lives were about Vietnam and people, America being ugly in its many ways. Dennis, as a lot of people know, his father was in the CIA, and he's always been bitter about that. And this is about a couple of a CIA person and a criminal sort of person who go through Africa doing dangerous things. And but the writing, as usual, is just perfect. And the book, The Laughing Monsters, I think just about anybody's going to get into it, or at least who likes the sort of dark notions that we deal with.
The Laughing Monsters by Dennis Johnson. I think we probably, if you go very quickly, have time for two more each. So, Jan, you can pick two at a time and just 30 seconds each.
Okay. Well, I was gonna talk about the biography of Penelope Fitzgerald by Hermione Lee. And Hermione Lee is a very highly acclaimed biographer of Virginia Woolf and Edith Wharton. And Penelope Fitzgerald is nowhere near as famous as most of her subjects, but she is equally engaging. She's a wonderful novelist, and people who have read her novels just stand by her.
Oh, she is truly extraordinary.
And she published her Penelope Fitzgerald published her first novel at 60 and won the Booker Prize for The Blue Flower.
Blue Flower
in the 90s.
A lot of her novels are tiny.
Yeah.
But they're perfect.
They're perfect.
But the biography's not tiny.
No, the biography is not.
The biography is major.
But her life was also really fascinating.
She did a lot of stuff with the radio and things like that.
And she went from a sort of a middle class or, you know, well-off childhood to living on a houseboat with her children. I mean, you know, it was
– All right.
Yeah.
Penelope Fitzgerald, A Life, and I'm not going to let you pick a second one, Jan. Paul gets to pick the last book of the day.
This book is called Hild, H-I-L-D, and it is a historical novel by Nicola Griffith. She is mainly known for lesbian novels, historical novels, many mystery novels, and I've found that virtually all English novelists whose first names are Nicola are fantastic.
I think that goes for
There's
all English
Nicola
women
Barker
named Nicola.
Who is amazing.
I love them all.
And this is about 7th century Britain, which is nobody writes about that time. And this is a truly great book. It is And
smart people are buying it.
And smart people are buying it for the right reasons. How about that?
All right. You can't argue with that. Hild, a novel by Nicola Griffith. Paul Ingram, thank you so much for being here today. You're done, huh? Jan Weissmuller, thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you, Charity.
Oh, Charity, you did such a good job with us.
Holiday Book Show.
We weren't on.
Next time
we'll be in our better.
I think we did okay.
All right.
Was that
Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio? We will be back again with Paul and Jan another time with our spring book show as well. Maybe if they agree to come back. We'll also put up this complete list later on today. And we'll be back on Monday with our holiday book show with all of the best picks for the kids in your life with a different team of independent booksellers. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.